Our sermon text today is Psalm 23. It's on page 501 of the Old Testament. And I love our NRSV, but every time I think of Psalm 23, it comes out in the King James Version. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leads me in the path of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil, my cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Back in May, when I first saw that the 23rd Psalm was one of the lectionary texts for the Sunday Melissa had given me, I thought, oh boy. And then I thought about it a bit more, and I thought, oh boy. Is it possible to say something new about Psalm 23? And as I looked it over and also considered the passage from Mark that Daniel shared with us, it was clear to me what my sermon would be about. I thought it'd be something about summer and good fortune and reflection and restoration, a chance to escape the crowds in the hallways of my school, go away to a place all my own, surrounded by green, my feet in still waters, and rest. That is not how the summer went for me. There was nothing ordinary about this summer for me. I did some of my ordinary summer things. I went to the gym, I visited my parents in Reno, I saw a movie or two. But unlike my normal life, where my house consists only of myself and my own needs and desires and whims, for the past 2 months, I've had those of a teenager, too, my 14-year-old nephew, Eric. A visit from Eric actually is part of an ordinary summer for me. He usually comes for about a week, and if you've known me a while, you know he and I typically have a pretty good time. We go to rodeos and racetracks. We've gone alpine sliding at Winter Park. We do drive-in movies and climb to the top of Horsetooth Rock. I do my best to wear him out, and then he goes home, usually a big smile on his face from ear to stick-out ear. At least that's how it was when he was 11 and 12 and to some extent 13. Now he's 14. If you've raised a teenager, you know 11 is not 14. And if the growing process wasn't hard enough, this year there's been quite a bit of upheaval in his home life. His parents have encountered grave and significant personal troubles, both individually and as a pair. And as a pair, it appears the path has come to an end. And eighth grade ended disastrously. And he's too old for summer camp and too young for a job, and no one's home all day, and it is not good for a boy to be too much left to his own devices. So the powers that be decided that Eric should come and spend his summer here with me, away from the chaos and turmoil, and have an awesome summer of adventure under the Colorado sun. Didn't go that way. First of all, this visit wasn't ordinary, because it was for 6 weeks, not just for one. There wasn't an exciting adventure planned every day. Breakfast was often cereal, dinner was often at home, major bummer. We had laundry, responsibilities, and rules of behavior so we could coexist in my small house, because I couldn't just succumb to the chaos and tell myself it was only another few days, it was another 5 weeks. In other words, it wasn't gonna be special time, it was going to be ordinary time. We've talked a lot about ordinary time around here this year. It's what happens when essentially nothing seems to be happening. In the liturgical calendar, it's not Advent, and it's not Lent, it's not Epiphany, or Pentecost, or even Triduum. We can all quiz the new guy on Triduum after the service. Ordinary is what happens every day. So ordinary time looks like a drag. For us, it's consisted mainly of getting on each other's nerves, bumping into each other's space and feelings and habits, all the more so because we're not used to each other. Being ordinary with each other isn't ordinary for us. It wasn't long before neither of us was our happy vacation special time selves. We became our ordinary selves, warts and cursing and impatience and bickering and all. No more best behavior, just usness, which is exhausting. We've had some fun, sure, but we've also had to apologize and make up and carry on and forgive, none of which is fun, none of which feels special, and very little of which feels anything like success. And speaking of success, Success used to mean we had a great time that day, full of laughter and adrenaline and eye-popping wonder. Not that difficult to fulfill when the kid's 11. But an activity that's an easy sell at 11 is received totally differently by a 14-year-old. Hiking, too hard. Socializing is out. You can forget about the county fair. So what, I typed to Marla Mosley and Erica Wharton in the wee hours, frustrated and disgruntled and entirely out of steam, what on earth does one do with a 14-year-old boy all summer? And moreover, what do you do with only one? How do you get it together with others just like it? And what happens if they don't mix? And what does success even look like now when it all just feels like dread and anguish and just plain over-itness? Most of all, it wasn't our typical summer visit because it wasn't his choice. He came because he had to, because the adults in his life said he had to, and he did not want it. If he knows the real reasons for being sent here, and I'm sure he does, they are not ones he wants to acknowledge. Like many kids in his situation, he feels both a deep responsibility to monitor the situation at home and at the same time a deep resentment for having to do so. To be removed from it, however temporarily, created just as much anxiety as relief. So to him, this year, Colorado was a sentence, not a vacation. This ain't home, and I'm not mom, and my cat ain't his dog. And nothing about it has been ordinary. So I've spent the summer grappling with two questions. What does he need, and what is my job? In past years, I saw it as my job to provide special, to provide extraordinary, to provide adrenaline and adventure and fun. But this year, my job seemed like something else entirely. And it's been hard for me to pin down just what it is. And it seems to shift and change constantly. But I knew what I wanted for him. I wanted him to get away. I wanted to put beauty before his eyes. I wanted him to rest and be restored. So my job, it seemed, was to try to hold back the world for him for a while, to get him away to a place by himself to rest a while. Is that what he needed? That's a tall order. I was trying to do what even Christ couldn't seem to do for his disciples, for himself. So we didn't do a ton of big stuff. We did little stuff. We went to the drive-in. We watched superhero movies. We got him a membership at my gym. Out and about, when I could get him out and about, we did little stuff too. Not Rocky Mountain National Park, no Pikes Peak. We stayed in our own backyard, so to speak. And when people use the expression, in your own backyard, there's often this implication that one's backyard is an ordinary place, not a mystical place full of wonder and beauty. But you know what's in our backyard? That's what's in our backyard. It's a 6-minute drive from my driveway to an overlook where I can see the moon come up over the whole city. A few minutes more gets me to the spot where the Front Range gives way to the peaks of the Rockies, spreading out beyond into forever. And there are bike trails and running trails and places to swim. And it just so happens that that's the thing he's asked to do more than anything else. Just go up to Horsetooth. Not to climb the rock, just to the reservoir. So I bought a couple big blow-up floats, and we drove up there, and we staked out a little spot among the rocks, and we hung our stuff on a tree limb, and we went floating. It isn't quite as peaceful as it sounds. Eric doesn't really do still waters. He doesn't do floating. He does splashing and pulling and dunking and yanking me this way and that. But then there would be moments where I'd catch him just looking quietly at the water, at the red rock strata of the Hogbacks, at the blue sky. Water, rocks. Sky. Ordinary. Like really ordinary. Extraordinary. The other thing he's been willing to do without too much coercion is jump on the bikes at a moment's notice in the late evening and pedal a few blocks with me up to my sunset spot. I've got this little turnout on the west side of Shields near Harmony. There's a big green field with a great view of Horsetooth Rock, and the silhouette of the rock is amazing in front of an awesome sunset. He's been into that too. We park the bikes next to that green field and we watch until it's over. There's one of those every day. Isn't that the definition of ordinary? Is that what he's been needing? Rabbi Harold Kushner, in his book, The Lord is My Shepherd, an in-depth analysis of the 23rd Psalm, talks about this need we have for the greens and blues of the natural world. He says that our modern world overwhelms us with conspicuous, high-excitement reds and yellows, and that by contrast, hospitals found that their patients fared better when their rooms were painted pale green or light blue, soothing colors rather than stark white. He says that the psalmist, thanking God for taking him through green pastures and beside still waters, had in mind the harsh, dry climate of Egypt, where his people had been enslaved, and envision the peace and serenity that would be theirs in the lush promised land. We need the serenity of God's natural world, Kushner says. I don't think these are things a boy Eric's age can articulate or really even grasp, but I do think some part of this kid is seeking out the peace that comes from God's world, from a natural order that doesn't tolerate excess for long without reining it in, bringing it back into balance and order, things most missing from his world right now. So back in May, I thought I was going to write about balance and order and serenity. Instead, with summer came the sudden discovery of more work to do, more needs to be met, further demands that deplete free time, and the requirement that I give of myself, tired or not, to a boy who suddenly seemed to have lost his way. And yet, what is my job? Not Christ. I can't fix this kid's life, put back everything the way it was, undo the struggle and the hurt and the mess of life and all of its unpredictability. I don't have the power to heal, to put things right with a touch or a word. And it doesn't work that way anyway. The people who clamored after the apostles that day, denied them rest, even grasped at the fringes of Christ's cloak, may have been healed of their present afflictions, but I'm sure they went on to face other struggles in their lives. That's just how it is. As there was no respite for the apostles, there was no respite in the ancient world for anybody for long. And besides, without adversity and challenge and difficulty, how do we grow anyway? I want to spare my nephew pain, sure, but I also want him to grow to be strong and brave and resilient. And a life of ease does not cultivate such traits. Can't fix it. And when someone you know is facing struggles, and especially when that someone is a child, it's a bitter pill to swallow. What is my job? Rabbi Kushner explains that even the sheep in Psalm 23 aren't exempt from adversity. The table is prepared in the presence of their enemies. They may lie down in green pastures and beside still waters, comforted by the shepherd's rod and staff, but they still must walk through the valley of the shadow of death. The good shepherd does not take them on a route that bypasses the valley of darkness, but he does walk through it with them. God's promise was never that life would be fair, says Rabbi Kushner in his introduction to The Lord is My Shepherd. God's promise was that when we had to confront the unfairness of life, we would not have to do it alone, for he would be with us. Is that my job? Just to be with him as God is with him? Is that enough? In my English classes, I teach a poem called Thanatopsis by William Cullen Bryant. It's meant as a reassurance, a comfort to a person struggling with fears of the grave, but the first two sentences set up the main gambit with an observation. Bryant says that when you're happy, nature appears cheerful and beautiful, but when your musings are darker, she provides a mild and healing sympathy that steals away the sharpness of your grief so subtly that you're hardly even aware that it's happening. So he says, when you're troubled, when you shudder and grow sick at heart, go forth under the open sky and list to nature's teachings, while from all around, earth and her waters and the depths of air, comes a still voice. I don't know if my nephew hears a still voice of God or nature or any comfort at all in those long afternoons at Horsetooth. Like I said, he's 14 and he does not do still waters. But it is clear that he wanted to be up there beside those still waters, in those sweeping vistas, or in that green pasture watching sunsets. And you know, we got along better on those days too. We were easier on each other, kinder to each other, more patient somehow. Is that what he needed? Was it my job just to provide the space drive the car there and then get out of the way. Eric heads home on Thursday. He says he's more than ready, though I wonder if there will be some measure of burn on reentry. Home will still be tough, and on top of that, he has to start high school in a month. There won't be any respite, and he'll have to dig deep for inner resources. Maybe I did an okay job, and he got what he needed this summer. Maybe the green spaces and the calm, cold waters are in his heart now, and he can return to them in moments when he needs the restoration of his soul. And maybe next year he'll want to come back again, back to our ordinary visits, the kind that last a week and are full of special time and special adventures. Maybe we'll be on our best behavior for a day or two, use extra courtesy, and forget about sensible bedtimes. But I bet that before long, we'll settle into plenty of ordinary time, too, in ordinary places. I didn't really get to fix anything for him this summer. There's only so much I could have done anyway, but I did get to walk with him for a while through this valley he's in, and I get to see him change and watch him grow, and that's pretty extraordinary. So my cup runneth over, and if sometimes I fail to notice it, may it be because it happens every day. May it be because it's ordinary.